It's another Sunday afternoon and time for Wordplay here on WPBM 103.5, the Progressive Voice of the Mountains. And it's another special pitch edition of Wordplay. So we're going to be coming at you this hour a couple times and ask you to contribute to the station, keep us on the air, keep the bills paid, and all those good things. So, but before then, we're going to hear some poetry, of course. This is from a reading by Peter Cully, who's a Canadian poet from Nanaimo, British Columbia, which is about an hour away by ferry from Vancouver. A really marvelous place. Canada has this wonderful poetry scene, has since the 60s at least, and probably before then, but I know it from the 60s, and Peter's one of the latest, some of the latest evidence of that.
Happy to be back here in Marshall. It's a place I've really come to love in my visits here. It's a part of the world I really love. It's meant a lot to me. The long poem I've been writing, Hammertown, is a kind of an attempt to find a way of getting both inside and outside of the experience of where I'm living and what I'm doing and the place, both historically and physically, and kind of being able to just absorb as much as I could in my visits here of the incredible beauty and heritage of this place has meant a lot to me. And I actually started this book, The Age of Briggs and Stratton. I wrote the first poem in Marshall, and I kind of brought it back with me and was able to get back home and work on home from it in a way. This is from a section of the book, Dowsing for Dummies, which is in memoriam to Robert Creeley. And I append a quote from Albert Gallatin talking about Andrew Jackson. A tall, lank, uncouth-looking person, long hair hanging over his face, a queue down his back tied with an eel skin. Marshall, N.C., just enough iron in my forehead to divert from the middle distance the moth in its path. Not enough to avoid by moonlight the back porch's sudden double step. A beaver tail slap resounding lodged in the elbow, an unreachable itch rather than pain per se. The intimate two-handed grip of the stranger steadying herself on me, the aisle man, at the depot. The sheriff dispenses silence with onions. A mustard-colored raffle ticket folded to a point of de facto forfeiture as outside the window the French Broad River recedes in mercury loops, unnavigably in either direction. Well, I heard there was a steamboat. I heard that today. In the 2 minutes of pale green dime-sized light left to us by the lightning bugs impact against the windshield, let us open the first volume of our Blue Pelican Animals Without Backbones to the illustration of animal light, which is a 1.5-inch square sepia-tone gravure with the words animal light lit by a glowworm's animal light. And the title of this is from a great book about this area called Sodom Laurel Elk. And one of the, it's a book of photographs, and one of the people being photographed is this sort of slightly ne'er-do-well person on this tobacco who isn't really paid but is given cigarettes and all the coke or all the dopes he could drink. I'm known for my love of soda. sip apple juice and ice melt and ice melt and ice melt and ice melt and ice melt. Sweet, 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 sweet tea. Sweet, 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 sweet tea. Sweet, 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 sweet tea. Peach knee-high over the Laurel Falls, cheer wine. The unnamed second-best orange pop ever after Narvik Fanta. A tangerine kick through undiagnosed veins with black floaters spelling your name. Bonjour, tristesse. When Gene Seberg's narration moves from compromised monochrome present to a blue scope past, impressive even on pan and scan VHS, for its unblinking existentialist noonday. Though thirst, therefore no beverage till cocktails at the casino, no picnics, not even the Circean constellation of objects, just the stairs to the beach, a foreground agreement, a narrow recession. An unplugged record player that had earlier spun Georges Auric's 1958 pre-Shankar version of Teenage Ambient, the kind someone might remember in a narration who'd suppressed, as I this Yoo-hoo colored river, everything else. Mountain Music, 1, Riley Puckett. The fiddle, the yodel, the harmonica, and the fife, the drumstick, the flintlock, pack animal, and knife. The zither, the whistle, and auto harp gave life. A great eye fluttering open in the deep forested host, driving back Covenant, Cherokee, Revenue's ghost. The 78, the 33, and the 45 spin like the rhododendron holler on its axis. To survive means breathing the dissonance like so much pollen, not to fit the rosin to the bridge or the finger to the mercury mind, is to awaken in an ancestor's grip so clammy and unkind. The singing dead glide through the layers as if tunneling to France. They're keening like the insect wail of an old thermos to dance like Bobby did, with one hand waving shark-like above the ship-strewn beach of history as they say, free, to unencumbered crawl beneath barbed wire past parish dogs and round the bloody wall. Mountain Music 2, and I don't know where I got this quote now. Thus a jug appeared on stage at their various performances, but purely for effect. Lean and Perno, after your mother's funeral, Adventist? Later, kite fights at Piper's Lagoon. Luckily, the barnacles were their own antidote, though not to the ugly vintages of the beer strike summer. Picking little Gregory Pecks out of my belly for months afterwards. Scattered now, those of us permitted to live, from the Palatinate of Prince Rupert to the free city of Holberg, and as at the end of side two today, cresting the hill at Dogland, Harewood below, the dusty, disheveled backdrop out of Sigmund Rodberg in the last actinic orange August sunrise of the Trudeau administration. None of our concern. I'll just read this quote. This is the beginning quote of actually the book three of Hamilton, which is called Parkway. It's from Fats Waller. After theater is our usual time for relaxation, and following dinner, I roam restlessly through the beautiful park there. At dawn, the birds awaken, and out of their lovely chirpings, one short strain stood out. I went back to the hotel, and by 10 o'clock that morning, with the aid of some delicious Amontillado sherry, we had finished Honey Hush. Cruel Summer, after Wallace Stevenson's Esthétique du Mal. He was in Nanaimo writing letters to Marshall, every now and then walking down to the playhouse for a smoke. The heavy leafage of a wet June absorbed the roar of the highway, so he sat on the damp carpet he'd slung over the old garden chair, and picked up and put down the book that had begun to curl on the dusty table, raising more dust. He trades places with the cat, so that when the gravel trucks gear down or loudly up, the cat can watch them pass and he could pretend to read. It was almost time for Rockford when the news intervened. Outside, the last bees on planet Earth rubbed sagey pollen on their undercarriages. Noting this, he raised his eyes from the news scroll to a copper Ford drifting through the twilight Bel Air of the Ford administration. This is the part of the sublime from which we shrink. Sepulveda, Ventura, and Culver City are to him an approximate haze as hard as calcium unspooling painkillers at every point of the compass. Something shifts and then he shifts. He apologizes to the dead space where he had been sleeping. He wakes in the pollarded half-shade of a dying walnut. The half-audible early birds tweet, earbones press against each other. A passing satellite pings its archive. Night had been a treat to him moving through space, sparing him memorable dreams, something medication never quite achieved. But if you sit there thinking, it all goes dim, and the golf ball brain comes rushing in like water through the window. All he knows of the moon, its interlocking T-shapes of broom yellow fanning oil slick tail feather, is that it's both outside and above, a bell held in a cup. The pain is such a little thing to be wandering abroad like that. He becomes aware of the heavy air and that he's now awake. A hiss of decompression through the leaves, hanging heavy in a hoary hanging sky, sickly after the rain hit. Turning west, he hallucinates as it falls each ring of the tree. He hangs hangers in a cupboard left to right. The wind chimes, soft memory gonging across his neck, Chico Hamilton style. A hand's width or two, more or less, unstrapping the braces, snapping the brasses, hinged rulers with oil, rarely looking up even at those shivers of bleached green leaf piercings where other people move through the light more or less as he does, but rarely with that quadrant over the shoulder you see what he sees angle. No narrating parrot or hummingbird or offshore bee dare follow so close. Knowing neither right nor left, nor above nor below, bouncing around at the end of a pineal stalk, like the third eye of realism, squinting through a low cloud. Chicken fist. Thanks for the purple insulator, Miranda. Prince as Darth Vader, later, but in a good way. Now when I go through customs, I'll have something to declare. The whole time I thought I was making pearls, I was just making owl pellets, but that's okay too. The horoscope's indication was always a figure's trick, with its false forking, frost-faking turntables not taken. But neither the road to Natopia nor the slippery slope inhibit the spiral of growth. Feeling. We breathed in a million ferns in the time it took for the radio to gear up for Tuesday recorder favorites. In the fridge, there are two experimental biscuits that the kid in Bojangles invented last night. One epic, the other pastoral. One a bowl of milk, the other a box of Legos, atop an X-Acto knife. By the way, it turns out those humbos weren't fighting because we let them run out of their narcissistic sugar supply. They just like to fight. Between the biscuits is a pool of icing that has been crystallizing since the ozone hit the mountain. No ice age to retreat from. The sugar just stayed put. This is my only one poem in this series, but it says Lives of the Great Composers. Stravinsky says, no Mozart menu chalkboard. He wrote at the keyboard and orchestrated as he went along. Tea weak, hot, espresso strong. For breakfast, two eggs shot raw. Before he wrote music, he learned how to draw. We need blotting paper, not echo chambers, he said, to illustrate the sludge-like texture of his blood. Rather spend your life with rubber dagger strangers, dragging your feet through the Mississippi mud, standing on your head in case of a flood. Rhythm's just a reminder, the rhyme's the thing, thud, Mondrian. close the window, I can't bear trees. Versus the thing itself, forked and folding in twos and threes, hands fluttered like turtle doves above his knees. He was the calmest man I'd ever seen. We'll make it back to Lubeck, Texas when we can. It's the state capital of marzipan. Bach, Buxtehude, Bernstein, Amber, and Buddenbrook's Hanseatic laughter, wrapping each page in colored ribbon after. The Ballad of the Man in the White Castle. This has Miranda in it again. The man in the high chair is a critter sitter of the first order. Granitic ticks brush mercury hair. He folds his paper over and over. He reads with pleasure that the young can trace their liminal state to those distant peasant barbecues that did not spare the great. With unity and impunity sundered at the root and goofballs spared, not rod nor boot, the bearship continues, deep and crisp and even, as though the lemon heart contained no lemon. And of the great and good, there once was a great many, their shuttered doors, buckled floors, and moral miscellany. Can I have as a witness Tuesday, said Miranda, the original decider, as the man in the white castle peels back paper from his slider. Corrugated as the fries he stuffs, as with deranged analgesia he puffs, a zeppelinish tabloid in his fist, and on the wall there is a list. The bus flew over the river, the bus flew over the river, corduroy over the river, corduroy over the river. For zombies best, a Pulaski axe, it's the standard global chopper. And if you have to ask how much, you ain't our kind of shopper. Rattle of dew in a Coke cup, ice chew till you throw up, when you gonna grow up and stop pretending that you know us. Ride the bus discussion. For a hamburger today, phone in a Vernon verdict, a double rainbow off Foul Bay. With nothing but an inset map, phone voice, headshot, leather strap, slowly he peels back the wrap. Slowly, he peels back the wrap. The Ballad of the Man in the White Spot. This is a BC chain of restaurants. To create a catchment for the blood, separate the lead from the egg. Strain salt through the mud, salt gravy with a heel you've begged. Spring, we're still inhaling ornaments, Valia Village tight with Easter pails and grails, pulling tinsel through our fundaments, flossing with electric eels. This biscuit tastes of creosote. It's a stratigraphic morsel. A puck in a vise on rice is nice for packing plaster on the torso. Work it with a bent skate key. Acknowledge the long math. Let's sift this tray, this stretch of crumb tray beach, as if our habits formed a path. Then it's later, like the kids say, trailing off on ceramic shins over links, tussocks, and hardstep curbs, using their hands as fins. The Ballad of the Man in the White Lunch, which is a long-vanished quasi-institutional restaurant on the downtown east side of Vancouver. The less picturesque village of the downtown east side. Former site of the last lumpless oatmeal east of the Occident. Lodge toast and oleo curled into a cone and softened with tea. Reach through the bars of the nectarine crate. Giant white man dread brushes blood from the marble, passes the HP sauce bottle tower, spares his bullet with a pin. Smoked oysters toothpicked on the Greyhound to terrace thus between the institution and the raw end of the head polisher in November of 77, 70 skins got you a hot tap, a heater, a prayer blanket of sky, and all the fortune cookies you could eat. Vitamins, a cubic yard of steam inhaled, pivoting from the sprouts. In the lobby, a labyrinth monochrome electrohome dispensing. After school, dark shadows, funorama, the kissing man, edge of sleep. And I'll finish up with, this is a poem for record collectors, because I refer to a lot of record labels in this. It's called The Falconer's Toad Arm. Bound a dime with a length of twine, plowed the licorice earth with bone, load-bearing cords dropped off the spine in shellacked redoubts of phonotone. For the sake of us feral kids, necks scratched raw in a two-horse town, the sleeping cops of Michigan poured out a can of Motown. The thistled face of Jimmy Shan in a flat of some small size, the hypno coin of Frankie's face, spitting steamship past reprise. Brown Chenachi cottage, angel feather frottage, this too is collage as a function of knowledge. Woke up this morning, began with a word, a letter of warning concerning a bluebird. The weather around Fats Waller obviates the squalor, which is more than I can say about Dynaflex RCA.
A remarkable performer who she actually performed at the reading with Peter Kelly, reading at the French Broad Institute of Time and the River in Marshall, North Carolina. It's a project of Leanne Brown, poet Leanne Brown, and director, actor Tony Torn, that's rapidly becoming a really important performance venue here in the mountains of Western North Carolina. So, anyway, that's what that was. So, and here we are in the studio, and it's time for us to remind you just how unique the radio here at WPVM is. This is a station that's true grassroots radio, just like Wordplay, there are 38 programs that are locally produced here by volunteers. We don't get paid anything to do this, and we don't ask to get paid anything to do this. It's all done because we love what we're doing. And joining me in the studio right now, Barry, how are you doing today?
I'll tell you, I've learned yet another instance where I really need this radio station just for myself. I love this Annie Rossi CD that you've been playing.
Isn't it remarkable?
And I need to listen to this entire CD now. And I don't know that I would ever have been exposed to this except on this kind of programming. And this is not a pitch. Right. This is the truth. I just walked in here to do this pitch. And the only reason that I'm hearing this great music that I probably wouldn't have heard anywhere else is because I'm one of the volunteers at this radio station, and I get the same thing when I'm listening at home. I hear things that I know I will never hear anywhere on commercial radio in Asheville, and that's why we're so passionate about supporting this radio station ourselves and proud to go to the community and ask for support, because we are very confident that what we're bringing here and what we're participating in is of value to this community. And the twice a year we come to people to support it, and this is one of those times. And you all can support it by calling 258-0085. We've got volunteers in the studio right now taking your calls. And Jeff's right. None of us get paid for doing this. This is all volunteer radio, people-powered radio. And the only way that we stay on the air to bring you this unique programming is when the listeners call in and support us. And that's our goal this year, is that every listener become a contributor by calling 258-0085.
Yeah, even if we know times are tough in the economy, and even if you can only afford to contribute $10, you know, what is that, a couple of mochas at Starbucks or something? I mean, you know, it's not a lot of money these days.
And if you walk in that donation, whatever you have in your pocket, come down to the station at 75 Haywood anytime this afternoon before 4 or 5. Come in and pick out a nice gift. We have some very generous donors who have made it clear that they're giving simply to give to the radio station to keep us on there, and they're not looking for donations in return. So guess what? We have some nice donation. We have some nice gifts for whoever comes in with any dollar amount. You're not going to walk away without something special in your hand, a CD, a book, a t-shirt. So please come down to 75 Haywood Street and walk into the station here and meet some of the volunteers and give to support your radio station, or call 258-0085.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, Annie Rossi is a perfect example of the kind of music you'll hear here and not anywhere else. She's not on a major label. She performs most of her gigs solo with her viola, dancing on top of a suitcase full of coffee cans. You're not going to run across that on most other radio stations.
And right before we came on the air, I was telling Jeff that it reminded me of early Laurie Anderson.
Yeah.
From the 70s.
Absolutely.
She would do these type of performances. She would play her electric violin while wearing ice skates frozen into blocks of ice.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of, you know, a person like that only becomes nationally exposed because they're getting exposure at the grassroots level. Laurie Anderson was not a big national, international star.
She was not a creation of a media conglomerate.
No, she wasn't. She was a creation of grassroots media and people who pay attention to the arts that start with a quirky individual who just gets it in her head that she has something to say, and it's crazy as all get out until all of a sudden people start paying attention. This person has something that we should all hear. And that kind of person doesn't get the kind of attention on AOL or NBC television or ABC radio or Clear Channel or public radio. They get that kind of attention at grassroots media level, and we're so happy to be one of the places where the innovative creative artist and gets their first exposure. And we're very lucky here at WPVM to have created the music department. This is sort of a tangent, but we are one of the smallest stations in the country that is on the tracking list that the independent labels use to generate, you know, to follow what kinds of things are hip and what type of things the major labels then pay attention to. This is sort of an underground thing that I was never aware about until the music department here explained to us that the reason that we get some of the really wonderful, innovative new music that you won't hear anywhere else is because these independent labels have found out that we are playing that kind of stuff, and therefore we start getting more of that stuff, and we're playing a whole lot of innovative stuff that you certainly won't hear on any other radio station in Asheville. And that's because we don't have advertisers. We don't have corporate playlists. We are a bunch of volunteers, and we have some very experienced music people. We have very experienced people in the literary arts like Jeff Davis and the others who contribute to Wordplay. And the only way that you tap into that is by keeping us on the air. And twice a year, you keep us on the air when you call 258-0085.
That's right, Mary. Thanks so much. Yeah. And, you know, like some of the other programming on here, Wordplay really is unique. I mean, not only do poets have, you know, no exposure on major stations, they have hardly any exposure at all on the airwaves. And so Wordplay is among a handful of programs that actually bring poetry to listeners. And it's kind of a mystery to me why that's the case, because poetry always has seemed to me just like a perfect fit with radio. But anyway, we're really happy to have brought as many, you know, wonderful poets as we have to the airwaves over the last few years. Some of our programs now have actually been picked up by major internet archive sites like the University of Pennsylvania's Penn Sound, which now hosts a couple of our programs and a couple of the original recordings that we've made programs out of.
Uh-huh.
So iBiblio in Chapel Hill has now hosted our permanent archive, so you'll be able to listen to programs that we broadcast over the last 3 years and going on 4 now. So,
And it's worth supporting.
It's worth supporting.
This is not, we don't receive the kind of advertiser dollars or corporate endowments that other radio stations have that come with strings attached, as we all know. The only way that this kind of programming is generated here and heard here is because we are people-powered, and the people right now are you. If you're home listening, if this is of value to you, and we know that it is, call 258-0085.
Great. Thanks much. And speaking of Penn Sound, we're going to listen now to some archival recordings there. Every now and then we drop back into the deep past, as it were. And we played Walt Whitman, we played Alfred Lord Tennyson, and really early recordings. These are not quite that early, but they're pretty dang early. These are readings by the great modernist poet Ezra Pound, who recently would have had his birthday. He would have been way old. He was born in 1885. These readings span the years 1939 to 1967 and include his Sestina Alta Forte, a really dramatic reading accompanying himself on percussion, which kind of reaches back to the bardic tradition. Some selections from Hugh Selwyn Moberly, and of course some of the cantos, Canto 1 and then Canto 81, one of the Pisan cantos, written when he was a prisoner of the U.S. Army and living in a cage.
Alta forte, loquitur in Bertrand's de Born. Dante Alighieri put this man in hell because he was a stirrer up of strife. Judge ye, have I dug him up again? The scene is in his castle, Alta forte. Papiol is his jongleur, the leopard, the arms of Richard Coeur de Lion. Damn it all this salt stinks peace. You horse and dog, Papiol, come, let's the music. I have no life save when the swords clash. But when I see the standards, gold of air, purple opposing, and the broad fields beneath them turn crimson, then howl I my heart, nigh mad with rejoicing. In summer have I great rejoicing, when the tempests kill the earth's foul peace, and the lightnings from black heaven flash crimson. and the fair thunders roar me their music, and the winds shriek through the clouds mad opposing, and through all the riven skies, God's odds clash. Hell grant soon we hear again the swords clash, and the shrill neigh of destrier in battle rejoicing. Spiked breast opposing, better would our stour in the year's peace with fat bards, bards, wine, and frail music. Ah, oh, there's no wine like the blood's crimson, and I love to see the sun rise, blood crimson, and I watch his spears through the dark clash. And it fills my heart with rejoicing and cries wide my mouth with past music when I see him so scorn and defy peace, his lone might against all darkness opposing. The man who fears war and squats opposing my words for stour has no blood of crimson, but is fit only to rot in womanish peace. Far from where worth's won, and the swords clash. For the death of such sluts I go rejoicing. Yea, I fill all the air with my music. Papiol, papiol to the music. There's no sound like the swords opposing, no cry like the battle's rejoicing. When our elbows and swords drip the crimson, and our charges against the leopards rush clash, may God damn whatever all who cry peace, and let the music of the swords make them crimson. Hell grant soon we hear again the swords clash. Hell blot black for alway the thought peace.
The age demanded an image of its accelerated grimace, something for the modern stage, not at any rate an attic grace, not certainly the obscure reveries of the inward gaze, better mendacities than the classics in paraphrase. The age demanded chiefly a mold in plaster made with no loss of time, a prose kinema, not assuredly alabaster or the sculpture of rhyme. These fought in any case, and some believing, pro domo in any case, some quick to arm, some for adventure, some from fear of weakness, some from fear of censure, some for love of slaughter, in imagination learning later, some in fear, learning the love of slaughter. Died some pro patria, non dulce, non et decor, walked I deep in hell, believing in old men's lies, then unbelieving. Came home, home to a lie, home to many deceits, home to old lies and new infamy, usury age old and age thick, and liars in public places. Daring as never before, wastage as never before, young blood and high blood, fair cheeks and fine bodies, fortitude as never before, frankness as never before, disillusions as never told in the old days, hysterias, trench confessions, laughter out of dead bellies. There died a myriad into the best among them, for an old bitch gone in the teeth, for a botched civilization, charm, smiling at the good mouth, quick eyes gone under earth's lid. For two gross broken statues, for a few thousand battered books. And then went down to the ship, set keeled breakers, forth on the godly sea, and we set up mast and sail on that swart ship, bore sheep aboard her, and our bodies also heavy with weeping, and winds from sternward bore us out onward with bellying canvas. Circe's this craft, the trim-coifed goddess. Then sat we amidships, wind jamming the tiller. Thus with stretched sail we went over sea till day's end, sun to his slumber, shadows o'er all the ocean. Came we then to the bounds of deepest water, covered with close-webbed mist, unpierced ever with the glitter of sun rays, nor with stars stretched, nor looking back from heaven. Swartest night stretched over wretched men there, the ocean flowing backward. Came we then to the place aforesaid by Circe. Here did they rites, Perimedes and Eurylochus. And drawing sword from my hip, I dug the L-square pitkin, poured we libations unto each the dead. First mead and then sweet wine, water mixed with white flour. Then prayed I many a prayer to the sickly death's heads as set in Ithaca, sterile bulls of the best for sacrifice, heaping the pyre with goods, a sheep to Tiresias only, black and a bell sheep. Dark blood flowed in the foss, souls out of Erebus, cadaverous dead, brides of youths, and of the old who had borne much, souls stained with recent tears, girls tender, many men upmauled with bronze lance heads, battle spoil bearing yet dreary arms. These many crowded about me with shouting, pallor upon me, cried to my men for more beasts, slaughtered the herds, sheep slain the bronze, poured ointment, cried to the gods, to Pluto the strong, and praised to Proserpine. Unsheathed the narrow sword, I set to keep off the impetuous, impotent dead till I should hear Tiresias. But first Elpenor came, our friend Elpenor, unburied, cast on the wide earth, limbs that we left in the house of Circe, unwept, unwrapped in sepulchre since toils urged other. Pitiful spirit, and I cried in hurried speech, Elpenor, how art thou come to this dark coast? Cam'st thou afoot outstripping seamen? And he in heavy speech, ill fate and abundant wine, I slept in Circe's ingle. Going down the long ladder unguarded, I fell against the buttress, shattered the nape nerve, soul sought of Arnus. But thou, O king, I bid remember me unwept, unburied. Heap up mine arms, be tombed by seaboard, and inscribed, a man of no fortune, and with a name to come, and set my oar up that I swung mid fellows. And Anticlea came, whom I beat off, and then Tiresias Theban, holding his golden wand, knew me, and spoke first. A second time, why? Man of ill star, facing the sunless dead in this joyless region, stand from the foss, leave me my bloody bever, forsooth, say. And I stepped back, and he, strong with the blood, said then, Odysseus, shall return through spiteful Neptune over dark sea, lose all companions. And then Anticlea came, thy quiet Devas. I mean, that is Andreas Devas in Officina Oecli, 1538 out of Homer. And he sailed by Sirens and thence outward and away and unto Circe. Venerandum in the Cretan's phrase, with the golden crown Aphrodite, Cypri monumenta sortitas, mirthful Orichalce, with golden girdles and breastbands, thou with dark eyelids, bearing the golden bow of Argeseda, so that...
Zeus lies in Ceres' bosom. Tyshan is attended of loves and of Cythera before sunrise. And he said, I aqui mucho catholicismo, in muy poco religión. And he said, yo creo que los reyes desparecen. Kings will, I think, disappear. That was Padre José Elizondo in 1906 or 1917, or about 1917. And Dolores said, come pan, niño. He prayed, my lad. Sergeant had painted her before he descended, i.e. if he descended. But in those days he did thumb sketches, impressions of the Velázquez and the Museo del Prado, and books cost a peseta, brass candlesticks and proportion. But wind came from the marshes and death chilled from the mountains. And later Bowers wrote, but such hatred, I had never conceived such. And the London Reds wouldn't show up his friends, i.e. friends of Franco working in London. And in Alcazar, 40 years gone, they said, go back to the station to eat. You can sleep here for a peseta. Goat bells tinkled all night, and the hostess grinned. Eso es Lutho Hall. Mi marido es muerto. It is morning, my husband is dead. And gave me paper to write on with a black border half an inch or more deep, say 5/8 of the locanda. We call all foreigners Frenchies. We call all foreigners Frenchies. And the egg broke in Cabrana's pocket, thus making history. Basil says they beat drums for 3 days till all the drum heads were busted. Simple village fiesta, and this for his life in the Canaries. Possum observed that the local folk dance was danced by the same dancers in divers localities in political welcome, the technique of demonstration. Cole studied that, not GDH. Horace. You will find, said old André Speer, that every man on that board, Crédit Agricole, has a brother-in-law. You the one, I the few, said John Adams, speaking fears in the abstract to his volatile friend, Mr. Jefferson. To break the pentameter, that was the first heave. Or as Joe Bard says, they never speak to each other. If it is Baker and Concierge visibly, it is La Rochefoucauld and de Maintenon audibly. Te cavaro le budelle, la corata a te. In less than a geological epoch, said Henry Mencken, some cook, some do not cook, some things cannot be altered. Junks, emon potid homa tonandra. What counts is the cultural level. Thank Benin for this table ex-packing box. Don't you tell no one I made it from a mask fine as any in Frankfurt. It'll get you off into ground. Light as the branch of Quanon, and at first disappointed with Shoddy, the bare ramshackle quay, but then saw the high buggy wheels and was reconciled. George Santayana arriving in the port of Boston, and kept to the end of his life that faint theatre, the Spaniard, as a grace quasi imperceptibile, as did most the V for you of Romagna, and said the grief was a full act repeated for each new condolerous, working up to a climax. And George Horace said he would get Beveridge, Senator. Beveridge wouldn't talk and he wouldn't write for the papers. But George got him by camping in his hotel and assailing him at lunch, breakfast and dinner. 3 articles. And my old man went on hoeing corn while George was a-telling him. Came across a vacant lot where you'd occasionally see a wild rabbit or maybe only a loose one. Aye, a leaf in the current at my great Snow Althea. Yet ere the season died a cold, born upon a zephyr's shoulder, I arose through the aureate sky. Laws and Jenkins, guard thy rest, Dolmetsch ever be thy guest, as he tempered the viol's wood to enforce both the grave and the acute, as he curved us the bowl of the lute. Laws and Jenkins, guard thy rest, Dolmetsch ever be thy guest. Hast thou fashioned so airy a mood to draw up leaf from the root? Hast thou found a cloud so light to seem neither mist nor shade? Then resolve me, tell me aright, if Waller sang or Dowland played. Your hand who will slay me suddenly, I may the beauty of him not sustain, and for 180 years almost nothing. Ed ascoltando al leger mormorio, there came new subtlety of eyes into my tent, whether of spirit or hypostasis. But what the blindfold hides, or at carnival, nor any pair showed anger, saw but the eyes and stance between the eyes, colour, diastasis, careless or unaware it had not the whole tent's room, nor place for the full eidos, interpass, penetrate, casting but shade beyond the other lights, skies clear, night sea, green of the mountain pool, shone from the unmasked eyes in half-masked space. What thou lovest well remains, the rest is dross. What thou lovest well shall not be reft from thee. What thou lovest well is thy true heritage. Whose world, or mine, or theirs, or is it of none? First came the scene, then thus the palpable Elysium, though it were in the halls of hell. What thou lovest well is thy true heritage. What thou lovest well shall not be reft from thee. The ant's a centaur in his dragon world. Pull down thy vanity. It is not man made courage, or made order, or made grace. Pull down thy vanity, I say, pull down. Learn of the green world what can be thy place in scaled invention or true artistry. Pull down thy vanity, Pacquin, pull down. The green cask has outdone your elegance. Master thyself, then others shall thee bear. Pull down thy vanity. Thou art a beaten dog beneath the hail, a swollen magpie in the fitful sun, half black, half white, nor know'st thou wing from tail. pull down thy vanity. How mean thy hates fostered in falsity, pull down thy vanity, wraith to destroy, niggard in charity, pull down thy vanity, I say pull down. But to have done instead of not doing, this is not vanity. To have with decency knocked that a blunt should open, to have gathered from the air a live tradition, or from a fine old eye the unconquered flame, this is not vanity. Here error is all in the not done, all in the diffidence that faltered.
That's Ezra Pound from readings now archived at Penn Sound of the University of Pennsylvania. Most appropriate given the fact that Ezra, of course, had been a student there in the first years of the 20th century. Well, we're pitching in extra innings here now, so if you'd like to help us wrap this game up, give us a call at 828-258-0085 or donate online at wpvm.org or by mail to WPVM 75 Haywood Street, Asheville 28801. And that's Wordplay for this week.
Mm-hmm.